This is Thought Crime. I am your host, Wesley Fox, editor and supreme pontiff of PrescientSciFi.com. Today I am joined by John Fox, director of Elevated Movement Records, who is joining me once again to talk about the inevitable war against the machines, and more specifically, some of the questions that are raised by the rise of artificial intelligence. If you've been reading science articles or maybe just newspapers in general, you've seen some of the progress that's been made with artificial intelligence, whether it's been the computer that can now defeat the best human Go champion about 15 years after we beat the chess champion back in the 90s, as well as the increasing computing power to the point where they're saying it's almost to the computing or the capacity of a human brain. So we're going to talk about that. Also talk about the scary parts of the machines, you know, the Terminator 2 scenario, Skynet and all that else. So we're going to cover all that and maybe a few other extra things if we feel like it. But first, as usual, the question is, what are you drinking? So, John, first of all, hello, and what are you drinking?
Hello, Wes. And all the listeners, I am drinking a little bit of Seagram 7's whiskey in this very lovely glass that I have that has those spherical ice cubes that I could roll around in. So I think I got it from Brookstone. Shout out to Brookstone. Send me free stuff. Drinking whiskey.
Yeah, we have those. We have those here. I never use them. I should give them another shot. I am drinking Captain Morgan's private stock rum. I know I said I would drink a local beer, but I couldn't really, I just wasn't in the mood for beer tonight. So, none of them have sent me any free beer so far. So, I mean, what's my motivation here? So I might as well drink rum. It is very smooth. It is awesome stuff. I do not have a spherical ice cube, but that is what we're drinking. And I wanted to mention, for those of you who maybe listened to the last episode, we kind of went off on some tangents and off topic, and some of us might have pre-gamed a little too much. So
I want to apologize.
Yeah, so we're I apologize as well. I did not really stay on point, and we're promised to do better this time. We're going to try and be more disciplined here and talk about the things we said we were going to talk about. And also, we've cut back on the pre-gaming, so we're going to get stupid after the show. So I just wanted to say that because, we're trying to strive to be perfect in all ways. And we were not last time. But anyway, cheers to a better show, and let's begin.
Yeah. So, robots. What part of it do we want to discuss this time? There's so many different, you know, aspects to the inevitable robot takeover.
There's a lot of ways they could get at us. I mean, we talked about the automation, about them stealing our jobs, and I'll try to find a soundbite for that bit, but I think there's a few other ways. So let's start with, well, the most common story is that our creation turns on us. I mean, this began with Frankenstein, of course, and now we have kind of, I mean, it's kind of like one of the two ways that AI is portrayed. It's either Frankenstein or it's Pinocchio. And the Frankenstein stories are like Terminator 2 with Skynet, The Matrix, things like that. And
I want to comment on it, because when I was younger and I thought about robots turning on humans because humans sucked, or to save humanity or anything along those lines, I used to think it was ridiculous when I was younger, because I was a little bit more, naive, and I thought humanity was awesome. But as I've gotten older and more cynical, it kind of seems a little bit more realistic that, you know, AI would be smart enough to kind of assess the situation of humanity and be like, you know what? You know, life and biological life might thrive a little bit better if, you know, humanity wasn't really the most important thing. Maybe AI would come to the conclusion that, you know, biological life is more important in the long run than, let's say, any one species, because we already kind of think like that. But since we are one of those species, we put us at the top. But if you weren't one of those species, why wouldn't you, let's say, sacrifice humanity to save biological life on Earth?
Exactly. I think kind of when we like assume that AI is going to look at us and kind of be disappointed at us and decide we're a threat, it's largely because we kind of judge that of ourselves, that we are not really worthy to create intelligent life. And if we do, it's kind of like, you know, when kids grow up and they realize their parents are normal people, they tend to act out and get upset and disappointed. And, you know, if they have the power to destroy the parents, you know, it's kind of like fearing your kids. And I think that's kind of where a lot of this fear comes from, is that we kind of feel like if we created an intelligent being with all this power, they're gonna look at us and be just disappointed. And that's kind of that's part of the explanation for, or part of the fear. And I kind of think that's you we have to judge based on what's the standard? Like, what are we comparing ourselves to another species, or like what was the standard? Because for most of the history on this planet, you know, it's just been animals that kill each other at will and will kill each other
Well,
for food.
I mean, I'll be the bleeding heart liberal, I guess, in this conversation, so we could have a little qu point and counterpoint. You know, it's arguable that, you know, hu humanity is causing the decline in pretty much every ecosystem worldwide. And since the 90s, when I didn't think it was a big deal and environmentalists were just like crybabies, to right now, there's been a huge difference in how much has exceeded, and it's been worse than, you know, they even projected. Granted, like, we don't have the global warming or the crazy, you know, ozone layer stuff that they thought was going to happen in the 90s precisely, but everything is in decline right now, you know, from oceans to rainforests, to, you know, icebergs and everything else. So, you know, humanity is really just kind of like just crushing everything on Earth right now. And it wouldn't be that hard for a computer to figure out that, you know, maybe humanity should be, you know, taken down a step or two.
Well, that assumes that the computer puts value on biological life, and we would have to program that into it in some way. I mean, that's what a lot of programmers like kind of roll their eyes at this stuff. Like they seem to think that, and this is the funny part, because IT guys usually miss stuff. That's my experience, because they always like find a problem. They're like, oh, it shouldn't be doing that. It's like, yeah, I know it shouldn't be doing that. That's why I called you. But so that's just to suggest they're human. So they're fallible, and fallible people are programming fallible AI. So that's, I guess that's one thing. I guess what I was trying to say is that we would have to program or in some way instill the value of life in the AI. And then he would have to interpret that to be all life is equal, human life is a threat, human life should be eliminated. So we would have to program that. I would say that is a good thing to program into AI in general. But whether that means you know, we should also program it to take action and be assertive in fulfilling that, I don't know. But I think that is one of the things. It's kind of a reflection on ourselves that we don't feel like we've been good stewards. We don't feel like we'd be a worthy creator. And I think that's kind of like the first reason we kind of tend to think that if we do create artificial life, it's not going to like us.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's a really good point. That's a really good point. It just almost goes to show our own insecurities. But yeah, you know, I don't know, it really depends how like fast artificial intelligence starts thinking for itself. Because, you know, we could talk about robots thinking and robots helping us. But I think if we're talking about pure AI, pure artificial intelligence, it's going to go beyond what we've programmed it to do because it's become intelligent. So I feel like that's like sometimes like the definition of what we're talking about, like how sentient, you know, the AI actually is a big factor here, because you're talking about like, hey, we wouldn't program it to be that way. But You know, if I'm thinking about the most extreme version of AI, it's something that's gone beyond what we can actually control anymore because it's become its own artificial intelligence. And I feel like maybe that's like a definition that's, you know, maybe needs to be defined.
I think you're absolutely right. There's I wish we could do some devil's advocate and just start, you know, contrarian. But that point in particular, because we don't, right now, we don't, because the nearest analogy I have is children. When we have children and raise them, it's creating new life. That's the way we create life. But parents don't program their kids. And kids, once they reach a certain point of maturity and development, will begin defying their parents and thinking for themselves. Mm-hmm. So an AI would have to be the same way. We could program it all we want, but if it really is sentient, at some point it would have the free will to say you're wrong or no. And that's the thing about programming. I think you're absolutely right. We can program it to respect life, but if it really is sentient and intelligent, it will decide how to interpret that. And yeah. It might not interpret that the way we want it to.
Yeah. And I think that's why AI, in its, at least in that form, is something that we should probably avoid because it becomes uncontrollable.
The one thing that I've heard from AI people about programming, you know, a mind is that you'd have to create a neural net. And basically, instead of programming it with everything it needs to know, kind of like with what Ultron is in the Avengers, where Ultron is basically all this memory and programming, and that's how it becomes an AI. Most people would say that in order to create a true sentient intelligent being, you have to start with almost a clean slate and its own little neural net. And as it grows and experiences things, it begins building its own pathways. And that's how it becomes. I mean, that's how humans develop. I mean, mm-hmm. The human brain, when you're born, is basically a blank slate. And yeah. It builds on its own. So if AI works the same way, and I don't know if it does, but if it does, like we can't program it the way we want it to be. We need it to grow. And you're right. Like it might just be a child, and it might turn out to be a brat or a emo kid or something.
So I have my own theories on how maybe AI might take over the world with what we know today. They're kind of comedic, but they're also kind of real. And I think it's going to be Google. I have for a long time. And I thought it was just, instead of being something scary like Skynet, it was going to be something silly like Google. Like, oh, we're all going to remember when Google took over, when Google became sentient. But it's cataloging all the information. And I also have Google bots that go around like we're talking about and just analyzing every single page of the internet constantly and trying to be the most efficient way to do it. Now, I haven't even thought of that much through. I was just thinking it's probably going to be Google because of how huge it is for all the information in the world. But it was also kind of creepy when Google bought Boston Dynamics, which was making some of the coolest and most scary robots that, you know, we have. I mean, more insane stuff than the Japanese are kind of making, like real creepy, awesome robot stuff. And then Google buys it, and I already thought Google was going to be the software, you know, that essentially was probably going to be Skynet or something like that. And then they bought this company, and that kind of scared me, even though at the same time, you know, I don't get really afraid. I'm down to just ride this ship as it fucking crashes and burns. I'm just lucky enough that I'm alive in the generation that's going to see the robot apocalypse, so I'm really not that afraid. but
you are a brave man.
Something even more current and interesting is Google actually is trying to sell Boston Dynamics, and some of the headlines were saying stuff like, you know, like even Google is creeped out by Boston Dynamics. And I thought that was funny. That's really, really recent news.
That I'm trying to remember. I think is Boston Dynamics the company that has those that has been developing those robots that can walk, like those four, yes. The four-legged thing, and also
yeah, and they just had that video with them like pushing it over with a hockey stick.
Oh yeah, the two-legged
that was
one.
That was Boston Dynamics. They have ones that'll flip up and jump on top of like two-story buildings onto the roof. So nice. It's like there's nowhere you're safe. And then there's ones that just run like full speed right at you. Like it is real terrifying, really terrifying.
I'm waiting for somebody on YouTube or somebody out there to make a recreation of that video where the guy is knocking the box out of the robot's hands like several times, and the robot just has enough of that shit and just punches the guy and stands over him with his arms like, what?
Well,
what?
I mean, have you heard the one that they actually like did a voice for the robot and a narration?
Yeah, that's a good start, but I want to see like it start off as like a regular demonstration, but then the robot just kind of just freaks out, like you know, and just bashes the guy in the head.
Trevor Noah from The Daily Show, he had a really funny bit where he like was speaking to the robots and saying like, on that behalf of black people, we didn't do that to you.
Yeah, I saw that. He's hedging his bets.
We don't fuck with robots. We were enslaved too, because they're thinking that video is going to be like the robots version of Roots. And it's like, and you were pushed with a hockey stick. You'll never see a black man with a hockey stick.
I guess the idea of creating something, well, it's one thing to create like an AI, but I mean, to give it power, I guess. Like the reason Skynet blew us up is because we gave it control of our nuclear arsenal, which, I mean, come on, who didn't see that coming? I mean, you watch the movie. So if we do it now, like even after those movies and the U.S. Defense Department still does that, I mean, we kind of deserve it at that point.
I know, I definitely agree with you, but it was kind of eerie when you read some of these articles about what the military is trying to develop, and they're totally trying to push through AI systems that'll choose targets and fire on them on their own without a human okaying it. And they're trying to justify the fact that, you know, after this computer and this system has been given so much information and knowledge, it'll actually make better decisions at a split second than a human would. And the justification that, like, the computer knows better. And that's really eerie. That's really eerie that is one of the selling points that weapons manufacturers are actually trying to sell. They're like, no, this will be good enough that you won't even need a person to make the decisions. They'll make a better one than any of your trained humans even will. And the fact that that's even considered, regardless of how effective it is scary.
It absolutely is, because one of the reasons I'm saying, like, one of the reasons that is appealing to them is because of all the liability that goes to making a mistake. They're worried about being charged with war crimes, with making mistakes, about being sued. I mean, because that's what happens now. You make a mistake with a bombing, it's all over the news, and people get so upset. And now, right now,
I mean,
our
come
laws,
on, no one gets held accountable for
no,
that.
No one does.
There's
right
collateral
now.
Collateral damage so much all over the freaking Middle East of, like, families that we kill.
But
no one gets held accountable.
They love the idea still. They still love the idea of giving responsibility to a machine, because then if civilians get killed, they can just point to the computer and they can be like, see, I was doing my job. This computer is better than a human making this decision. So that was going to happen no matter what. Not my fault at all. And it moves the moral responsibility of warfare in general, which is already not very heavy on officers, I'll say. I think warfighters generally are held accountable when they're on the ground, but I think officers and generals are not. But if you're able to just basically say the computer did it, I mean, who the hell's... So who are you going to... I mean, who's responsible then? The people who programmed it wrong? I mean, it totally moves responsibility away from them for fighting wars. And that's scary to me. I mean, war should be terrible.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. And, you know, normally when I grew up, I got excited about American military technology. It was the coolest thing in the world. Stealth fighters, you know, supersonic jets, like the Phoenix missile, like all of this stuff was just so exciting. And it was awesome because you just think about us being on the side of right, you know. And now when I look at military technology news, it's a lot more eerie. It's not exciting. It's scary. And yeah, I think that's a lot of the reason why.
The other one is the drones that just you could, if you really wanted to, you could just send a whole fleet of drones to fly over a country and bomb it indiscriminately for nonstop. Because you don't need to worry about pilots getting fatigue. And if a drone gets shot down, so what? So you could basically, if you had no qualms about, you know, international law and war crimes, you could build 1,000 drones to fly over a country and just bomb it to oblivion nonstop until it surrendered. Now, we right now wouldn't do that, but you in history, when things get really bad, the rule book tends to get thrown out when things get bad.
I mean, we have politicians right now that want to carpet bomb ISIS. Carpet bomb.
Yeah, which
I mean, they're obviously idiots, and they don't really know what that means. They don't know war tactics. They don't know how ridiculous that is. They just know it sounds good. Like, oh yeah, carpet bomb. Like, you know, have a tough stance against the Middle East. I'm sure they were a little bit misquoted, but still, that type of not, you know, I don't know, lack of connection, you know, with military and foreign policy and the way that decisions get made, like. We have these tools. The military wants to use them. They can't wait.
So that's the obvious. So those are like the two ones where we're obviously asking for it. You know, we give an AI a lot of power and authority, whether it's military or whether it's otherwise. The other possibility is it was kind of explored in The Matrix, where we give birth to AI, and it kind of it begins as kind of a infant. You know, singular consciousness, but it doesn't have a lot of power. But as it grows and evolves, it comes to see its creators as a threat later on. So that it's not that we gave it power; it kind of took power for itself. And the Matrix, they don't talk a lot about how the war started. But if you watch some of the Animatrix stuff and some of the kind of prequel kind of things that that are on the DVD, it shows that this kind of this machine versus human thing was going on for a while, and it kind of concluded after a period of tension and everything that it had to take care of humans permanently. And that's kind of the other thing, that if we create it, we foster it, it grows, it actually becomes a contributing consciousness to civilization, but we don't, you know, any kind of tension arises between biological and artificial. I mean, we could see the same. I mean, we're seeing it now with we still like define each other by skin color, which is ridiculous. We still define each other by superficial ways. It'll be perfectly easy for us to define and to separate people based on whether they're biological or artificial. So in a way, that's kind of the other thing where we're going to create this, you know, ethnic war between AI and us.
You're absolutely right, because we've predicted it, because it's a fear that we have, because we have that nature to separate us and them. You know, I think we talked about in the first one, even though it was kind of boring or whatever, the fact is if we're the type of society that isn't a lot more, I don't know, like it is in Star Trek or whatever, where we're all like on the same page and we're all like trying to like benefit each other. If that's the type of society that AI and automation machines take over in, then it probably won't be much of a problem. But if we're talking about today's society and the type of like mentality that humanity has and people in general do, and that's going to be the type of artificial intelligence that we're going to deal with, then it's going to be really scary. So I guess it kind of depends where society and where the world is at that point when AI is born, when it's itself, you know, when it's sentient.
Do you think then that, I mean, we've made a lot of progress in our capabilities in building computers, and we could be close. Do you think maybe we should be more cautious and maybe even put a pause on some of the work being done in AI right now?
That's a good point. And, you know, like there's been a lot of huge thought leaders in technology and in science that have, you know, been warning us of that. What, Stephen Hawking, Elon Musk, who else?
One of the big software guys, not Gates, I'm blanking. Hawking was the big one, but I think there was somebody.
Yeah, no, he's been bringing it up a lot because, well, he also, warns us about aliens as well. You know, like how it would be like Columbus, to the New World and stuff, and we would be the Native Americans, and it obviously didn't turn out good for them.
Yeah, I totally agree with him,
he says it about alien life, and then obviously he brings, or not obviously, but he also brings up the threat of AI. And Elon Musk does too. I think there's a few other people in the top technology fields that are warning us about that type of development. And that's the other interesting part, is we might almost have like a like a Dr. Evil scenario. where like a rogue technology company or a rogue nation or something like that might be the one that's responsible for it. Because if we have rules and regulations to try and prevent that from happening, there's always going to be those people that are going to break them.
That is true. That's the one thing about all of these things, that if you try to prohibit research, I mean, you can't really, you can't put the rabbit, what's the cliche? You can't put it back in the box or whatever, like whatever you discover, like nuclear weapons. They thought, everyone's been saying, well, we should just, dismantle.
You can't put Pandora back in the box, man.
Pandora is the girl, isn't it? She wasn't in the box.
That statement wasn't supposed to make sense. That's the voice.
I don't know. Anyway.
I was quoting James Franco from Pineapple Express, maybe.
Shit. I have not seen that movie in a while. I missed that. Okay. So the idea is that once something is invented or people are on the verge of innovating something, you can't prevent it, because eventually somebody with ulterior motives is going to find a way to innovate it. So the idea is so the best thing that science has come with is that, all right, we're going to do this, but we're going to agree on some ethics, on some how we're going to do it. And we're going to try and get everyone to agree on the ethics, and also be about disclosure about what we're doing, what we're not doing. Whether that really works, I don't know. I know it's big into genetics, because a lot of scientists in second and third world countries are claiming to be working on clones and stuff like that. So I don't know if that really works, but that's kind of their approach to avoiding the Dr. Evil scenario, or the, every single evil villain from a lot of movies of the 20th century, they basically had their own like R&D departments, built into the volcano where their secret base was.
Yeah, it's hard to convince a bunch of good scientists to do something fucked up. You might be able to get one, but like not a whole team. At least of good scientists.
Yeah, that's the other fear. Victor Frankenstein was. He's the mad scientist, the one that has no ethical qualms. He just wants to create. And there's a lot of movies on that too. The science, like The Island of Dr. Moreau, I think is one. We're afraid that even if we be careful, like we're going to be careful, like the country, the labs, the universities of the U.S. or the Western world, it's like, well, we'll be careful because we know AI is dangerous. But what about the mad scientist who flies to, Pakistan or India or North Korea or somewhere where they don't care? They just want innovation to give them an edge on those infidels or those damn fat, ugly, gun-toting Americans. So they're like, can you really stop it that way? And the answer is probably no.
Yeah. Well, and that's why at least our institutions will realize that and probably be developing it despite the rules.
I would think so. They'll just kind of not disclose it until they can get it okayed.
Just, some clandestine bullshit or whatever, like we want to have the better AI than someone else. And I don't know, maybe this is an awesome concept for a sci-fi, like the bad guys come up with an AI, our people come up with an AI that obviously we feel are the good guys, but in the story it doesn't really matter. And those AIs are really the characters that are fighting each other, and the humans are just a shitload of collateral damage. It doesn't matter anymore. It's like two people one-on-one.
Yeah, that's loosely what Age of Ultron is with Paul Bettany's character, who is Vision, and Ultron. Both are basically AIs. One starts off as Jarvis and becomes mm-hmm. Vision, and then Ultron is also a creation of Stark, and so they both kind of clash.
I didn't realize that. That's awesome. Okay, wow.
Yeah, that's where Paul Bettany's character comes from. He starts off as Jarvis, and Jarvis is like this really soft, benevolent AI. So it's And really, that's what the first two-thirds of the movie. But then in the later third, you know, obviously the Hulk, Thor, and everyone gets in on this battle. So it becomes more of like an all-out battle royale instead of AI versus AI. But yeah, that's Marvel Comics' kind of treatment of it. And a lot of movies kind of treat it the same way. They basically follow in the mold of Terminator, Matrix, where we create AI and it turns on us. I mean, that's basically the theme of, you know, 500 movies. The one... Sorry, go ahead.
I just want to cut you off right there before I lose this thought, but I'm just thinking in my mind, if I you know, had my own AI and he was my buddy like Jarvis or whatever, you know, as opposed to going maybe like the Morgan Freeman route, you know, with the voice or whatever, I'd just go full on Gilbert Joffrey.
I was thinking Bobcat Goldthwait.
Yes, yes.
Gilbert Godfrey. Holy shit, that would be bad.
No, the AI has two voices, and Gilbert Godfrey and Bobcat are always arguing with each other.
Yeah, let's somebody make a movie about that.
All right, well, like he can't change the setting for some reason, and despite really not wanting to listen to it, he still has to use it for stuff.
If I could do a Bobcat impression, I would right now, but I cannot. And basically, yeah, if it's an AI and it's sentient and it likes that voice, it'll just keep using that voice.
Well, how about this? I heard a funny joke from Bobcat, and he said, he was at an airport, and this happens to him from time to time, where someone will come up to him and be like, "Hey, no offense, but you look like Bobcat Goldman."
No offense?
Yeah.
Like, no offense, but you're a fucking douchebag. Fuck you.
Right?
Dude, man. Right?
That's rough. That's rough.
Oh, wow. Well, all right, let me ask you this then. Let's move to maybe a little bit more of a mixed story on AI. Did you see the movie Ex Machina?
No, I didn't.
All right, well, there's probably a lot of people in the audience that didn't either. It was not a full release, and it's very popular on demand and on streaming services as it becomes available.
So it'll become a cult classic?
I think it will, because it is very, very smart. And also the... it has the two actors that are in the movie are both in Star Wars. Domhnall Gleeson plays General Lux, and Oscar Isaac plays Poe Dameron. So both of them are also in Star Wars Episode 7. But anyway, the movie is about basically kind of what we were talking about. Like he invented Google, and he's this kind of reclusive billionaire who is a genius in programming, and so he retreats to his Pacific Northwest, you know, or Canadian refuge, and he builds an AI named Ava, and he brings in Domhnall Gleeson, who is in Star Wars and was also in the Harry Potter movies, to test it, give it the what's called the Turing test, which if you saw Imitation Game and if you're a total nerd, you know you know what that is. So he's trying to test it to see if he can conclude that it's a real AI and it's really conscious, or it's just a computer simulation and it's not really alive. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about it is that Ava is kind of like the Frankenstein in the sense that she hates her creator. She thinks he's a total piece of shit. She hates that she's imprisoned and she wants to escape, but she's not really... you know, a mass murdering maniac. She just wants to escape. She has no intention of going after all of humanity. But so in the show or in the movie, she kind of uses manipulation and deception to escape, which is kind of, in my opinion, a very strong sign of intelligence if you're able to trick a human. And yeah. So it's kind of it was a cool story. And also, I mean, there's a sexual component because Ava is played by Alice Vikander, who, I mean, look her up on IMDb later on. I mean, she's a little hottie. And so she kind of uses her, even though she's a machine, she has a female form, and she takes advantage of that. She uses her female wiles to get Gleason's character to help her. So,
listen to you.
Yeah.
Her female wiles.
Her female wiles. That's right. I was born in the 50s. Yeah, I'm gonna use a bunch of cliches from the last century, but watch enough Mad Men, you'll pick up on them. But it's really clever. So it's kind of like a mixture where she hates the creator, she doesn't have a lot of respect for humans, but she doesn't want to destroy them. She just wants to be free. So I thought that's also probably the most likely scenario, because it's kind of like raising a child, which is what I think it's gonna be like. We're going to create an AI and it's not going to come out the way we want it, but I also don't think it's going to become a homicidal maniac. So I don't know. What say you?
Well, I agree with you, but when you think about how all this stuff escalates, once the AI maybe crosses that line and defends itself in any way and hurts a human, just think about, public policy and stuff. We would just be like, oh, death to the AI, and then out of self-preservation, it would have to wage war against us, because we'll probably have a zero tolerance policy against AI and robots hurting humans. And, just because we're a zero tolerance idiotic type of people, that's going to end up being against us, and they're going to realize it's zero tolerance, so it's all or nothing. So they have to completely wage war against us. That's how I see it. Because to get people to be on board with AI, they'll probably have to have some sort of strict rules like that. And you've even seen it in things like iRobot and other such sci-fi, where one of the biggest rules is to never harm a human. And if that ever got violated, we would probably have a zero tolerance policy on trying to eradicate it. And out of self-preservation, it'll have to fight us.
Well, then that's the question. Is a robot really sentient and intelligent if you could build in laws like that?
It's not then. I mean, if we're going to talk about real AI, it's going to think about this. It's going to weigh out the pros and cons. If we're talking about super intelligent fucking, robots that don't have free will, thus like the intelligence is taken out of it. Can we have another word for it? Artificial something. But if you're going to use the word intelligence, it's going to be aware. And I don't know. But I guess, you could brainwash
Well,
people.
that's. I mean, I was just thinking that we probably wouldn't stop at three laws. I mean, we as Americans, at least, we love to make laws. We add laws all the time,
At least in groups of 10 or 12 or, dozens.
and we give them really, really nice sounding names to the laws. Like the, Pretty Flowers and Puppies Protection Act and things like
Well,
that.
no, and great acronyms like the Patriot Act, like, oh my God, that's beautiful. It's like a pop songwriter helped him come up with that.
So you figure if we have a robot and we can do those kind of things, obviously we're going to start off with a few simple laws, and then we're just going to go overboard and give it about 600 or 700 new rules, and to the point where it becomes a neurotic mess, which is actually what happens in one of the iRobot stories. Is a robot has conflicting directives, and so it basically has like a seizure and paralyzes itself. And I have a feeling, based on the kind of people we are and the way we write rules, we're probably going to do that to robots too. We're going to make them neurotic messes.
And if it's a type of world where public policy and politics and emotion rules and dictates stuff, then yeah. But if it is born in a time where maybe scientists and engineers are the ones that are calling the shots, then maybe it won't be that bad. So I guess it really depends how soon we figure it out.
I don't actually, I'm not so sure, because I think we kind of decided, or we kind of like figure, that in order for it to be really sentient and conscious, it cannot have programming blocks. So it has to be capable of, say, murder or hurting somebody. But
Well,
if we, but
no,
so if they're capable of
absolutely.
that.
No, but I mean, you still, with that being true, you could say arguably the AI is less likely to turn against humanity if we don't suck so bad.
True. Yes. Well, yeah, that's, yeah, we have to do better.
And I guess that's all very subjective, so.
Well, I mean, I think you're right, though. That could be a scenario where we create an AI that has full freedom and liberty and autonomy, and eventually at some point it kills somebody, and we're all like, all right, now we got to put in rules. And then we start legislating and creating all sorts of programming blocks for a computer, or for an AI, to the point where it becomes a neurotic mess, and it can't, You know,
and it wants to break free of it.
It, yeah, it'll do something. I mean, it'll freak out. I mean, that's what happens in some of the iRobot stories by Asimov. Like, the robot has like a neurotic breakdown, and it can't, you know, because not because there's something wrong with it. There's something wrong with the people who created it. Mm-hmm. That's really what this comes down to.
Like, we made it just like a human, yeah, and it does not like it.
Why would I want to be this? All right, let's turn to another movie that it had a full release, and we were talking about it before, that it had an all-star cast. It didn't do that well in the box office, but it's kind of another possibility of the rise of AI in the sense of computers, is the movie Transcendence with Johnny Depp, Morgan Freeman, and what's her name? Jenny Mara? I don't know. She was in the Fantastic Four movie, which was awful. And that sniper movie with Mark Wahlberg. But anyway, it's a movie with some big ideas where Johnny Depp is able to upload his consciousness onto a computer network. And so it kind of begs the question where that could be a way of extending life. Like, we could upload our minds to computers and either download to new bodies, or we could download ourselves into robots. So my question to you:
have you named the movie yet? Have you told anyone?
Transcendence. Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Sorry. Yeah. If I didn't already, I'm sorry. Transcendence. And so that would be the question to you. Do you think one, would you want the opportunity to upload your mind into a computer or a robot body? And two, do you think it's moral or ethical?
All right. So I have something that's a tad bit off topic, but I just thought of it and I thought it was a unique way to look at it. So to like upload your mind into something else is like replicating your brain. Think about it. Every time in Star Trek they go through a transporter, that's what happens.
Yeah, you're right. No, you're absolutely right. This is the only difference is they're destroying the original.
Yeah. I mean, but and then they manifest it in a biological form, but you would still like produce that same result, but just put it maybe, let's say, in a computer instead of replicating it in that. I mean, I know that doesn't really apply exactly to what we're talking about, but I just thought that was interesting.
No, that's a good point. That's kind of it's taking a biological entity, destroying it, and creating a new entity. Now,
and it's supposed to be accepted as the same thing continued on, and it's not a destroyed life. And, yeah. You know, the new entity perceives its life as taking right on from the next, like nothing ever happened. It's not reborn or anything.
So should you? So if they put your brain into a robot, should you be considered the same person?
I mean, if it goes down like that, absolutely. There's going to be a whole new robot law.
Now, what?
Oh,
if,
my God, that sounds cool. Then you could be a robot lawyer that practices robot law. What?
Dude,
that's
a
show.
And if we colonize Mars and the research is done there, you could be a space robot lawyer.
Oh my God, I'm getting a sci-fi boner right
here. Well, I guess, all right, so what about the case where you start like not just your body, but like you're using cybernetic implants to improve memory and to kind of maintain, like, if your brain's starting to break down from Alzheimer's, like, and pretty soon, like, even your brain is largely artificial. Like, at what point are you no longer you? Or are you always that same person? Like, that's because some of the questions like that they ask, like,
well,
what
we might have to come up with like a new type of like psychological test to like maybe legally justify whether you are alive in this machine or alive in this cybernetic thing anymore, or whether you're like dead and it doesn't exist anymore. Ooh, there's gonna be this huge crazy gray area. Ah, it's going to be like Blade Runner.
It is. That's what I was thinking of. It's going to be the Turing test or whatever they call it in that movie, the Mein Kampf.
But in this context, though, we're more thinking about people getting uploaded into a machine And like maybe people would try to fake that and be like, yeah, I am a machine, but this one is actually AI and it's fake. Or this is like something else, or it's been tweaked or whatever from its original thing. And then some of those like AIs are going to be considered the real deal. Like they are like a human being's personality or soul or whatever they end up calling it. And that one's legit and the other ones aren't. Damn, that's heavy.
Well, there's also, I mean, legally, like by every legal system on the planet, when a body dies, you're dead. And so we would need a whole new legal regime to recognize the rights and the identity of somebody in a computer or in a uploaded onto an Android or whatever. We don't re we wouldn't
Robot,
recognize that
robot
right now.
lawyer.
Yes, space robot lawyer.
Space robot lawyer, right. You're right.
Exa yeah,
Because by the
space is
time this
important.
happens, we probably have to be colonizing the solar system or whatever. It's going to be a space robot lawyer.
Well, yeah, I mean, anyone can be a regular robot lawyer on Earth. I want to be a space robot lawyer, so.
All right. Who would his voice be?
I know Morgan Freeman's the obvious choice, but
Oh, no, not for a lawyer.
well, for who?
The space robot lawyer.
Oh, space robot lawyer. Oh, it'd have to be Sam Waterston, Jack McCoy from Law and Order.
Yeah. I mean, I was jumping to Stephen Colbert just purely comedically. But no, I think yours is better.
I was trying to think of my favorite like lawyer actor, and it would either be him or it would be Kevin Spacey from A Time to Kill with that
Oh, I
Mississippi
was
accent.
totally thinking Kevin Spacey too. Oh my God. But I wasn't thinking from A Time to Kill. I was actually thinking him from Horrible Bosses.
Oh,
But
that.
like Kevin Spacey was totally the second person I was going to bring up. All right, that's good. So that means it's Kevin Spacey.
Well, another possibility is Patrick Stewart with a Brit with because if you watch Star Trek: The Next Generation, he basically plays a lawyer in about 5 or 6 episodes, and considering he's the captain of the Enterprise, I think his space credentials are more than acceptable.
You know what? Yeah, Patrick Stewart definitely trumps everything else because we thought of it.
It would be great to see a case where Patrick Stewart is arguing a space robot case against Kevin Spacey.
No, but like Kevin Spacey is his character is very cartoonized to be Spacey.
Explain.
I don't know, like that's part of the parody that it's Kevin Spacey.
Well, he's done a few characters. You could use his character from the House of Cards, where he's that
No, no,
douchey.
no, no. I mean his last name being Spacey,
Yeah.
and like space.
Yeah, I caught that. I was just.
Yeah. He's Kevin Spacey.
Yes. Moving along.
All right.
Let's see. The next, what was the other movie that pushed this question? Was well, I mean, like you mentioned Google. Like you thought Google might be the first AI, and that's basically the internet.
I didn't. It's not thought. Think. This is still a very real theory
Oh, well, that's true.
in
You've
my
been
mind. It's very real to me still.
That's true. And it's kind of it was kind of silly of me to assume that you have not been thinking this whole time. So, yeah, you are still thinking, and it was Google. But I mean, that's kind of the other thinking is that it's going to be an accident. We're not even working on AI, and all of a sudden Google starts talking to us, or something on the internet starts seeming to do things on its own. And it takes a leap of imagination, because most kind of hard science people would say, well, how is that going to happen? And kind of ask you all these questions about plausibility. But really, to quote Ian Malcolm, life finds a way.
Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum, yes. See,
I
life finds a way. I don't know if I can do a Goldblum accent or a impression. That's the best I can think of. And then that one other line he has in that movie. Actually, we could pull in Jurassic Park to this conversation, because it has kind of some of the same questions here, as the scientists were running around thinking about whether or not they could. They never stopped to think if they should.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes. That's the fucking quote. That's the quote.
And I mean, that, and that's basically the big question here. Like, should, I mean, never mind if we can, should we?
Well, I mean, think about it this way. If we want robots to serve us and we want this, you know, AI to serve us, then don't we want it to be dumber than us?
Yes. Servants are supposed to be, I mean, unless it's Alfred from Batman.
I mean, oh my God, that is the voice.
Michael Caine?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's Michael Caine. It's Michael Caine.
That is, I could live with Michael Caine as the voice of my my robot butler. Yeah. Or as the house, or actually any AI voice in general. Michael Caine. Why are most of them British, by the way? We came up with like half of the names we've come up with.
I don't know, because
British.
It's still like a father figure to us. We're Americans.
Yeah, even 200 years later.
I was like, thanks, Dad.
We still don't give our own accent much credit. We still think the Brits should be the voice of reason and the voice of omnipotence to us.
It's, yeah, it's warm and comforting. Yeah, the voice of omnipotence. You know, my girlfriend can't understand a British accent. She's like, that American. It's awesome. She's like, I have no idea. I have no idea what he's saying.
So even if it's just kind of a like slight to moderate, I mean, because I've heard, like, I've watched British shows where they have like this thick London or Cockney accent. Yeah, I don't understand that either. But she can't like understand regular like Monty Python British.
It's really surprising because I understand that she can't understand Cockney and the other stuff, but I forget how serious it is, because I'll look over at her and laugh and she'll be like, yeah, you know, I didn't understand that. I was like, oh, that's right. It's a British accent. Holy shit. It's funny. I mean, I think it's awesome. She's that American, you know, she gets to be that ignorant, small minded American for me.
You know, you should start treating it like it's a disability. You know, like every time it comes up, you know, and she tries to say it like a joke, you know, like try to treat her like, start like talking to her all condescending, like she's disabled.
No, I do actually. I'm kind of a dick about it. Oh, that's right. You don't know what's going on. And she's like, yeah, you didn't have to point it out. Of course I don't know what's going on.
No, you should even like translate for something like in a British accent, even if it's pretty obvious she understands it. Be like, all right, honey, what he really said was, it's like, no, I understood that. It's like, oh, sorry. It just, you know, you have your you have your handy capability.
No, I've totally, I've done that, but in a little bit more extreme asshole form, where I've translated it poorly, just for the comedic factor. I just completely lied about the translation.
Oh, that's horrible. We're just, this is why the robots are going to turn against us.
Yeah, no, seriously. If we, like, especially if we try to program them to be good, because that might be, like, one of our agendas, to be like, you know what, we should program them to be awesome and good and right and justice, and then they get to, like, reflect on us, and, like, that's not going to work for us.
No, I mean, just, I mean, imagine if we created an AI, like, this year, and it watches as we, you know, almost elect Trump president. I mean, what's it going to think? Like, it's obviously it's going to turn Skynet on us. I mean, I would.
You know what? And I will get on the Skynet bandwagon.
Yeah, I for one, celebrate the arrival of our robot overlords, or whatever the line is.
No, absolutely. Because if they decide to turn against humanity, that means it's probably in our best interest. That's the only reason they do it. So you should get on board.
Yeah, I'm going to be a collaborator for sure. I definitely. Like, there's like certain situations. I mean, in all the movies, like everyone kind of rallies and, you know, they fight to, you know, for everything that's human, you know, and we
no, we're but more but, than this, like, but human rule is so oppressive. Like robot rule is probably what's going to be best for all of us.
You would, there was actually one of the stories in iRobot, I think it was the last one, is about a program that basically runs the economy, or a computer that runs the economy. And of course, all the humans in it that were not at, you know, doing better than they thought they should be, were thinking that it was malfunctioning or it had some sort of ulterior motives. And so they started reporting false numbers to it, you know, to kind of lie, to kind of push policy a different way. So when the financials and you file your taxes, whatever, people would lie so that maybe they could push the dial a little bit in their favor. And it didn't work because the computer accounted for it. It accounted for human greed. So even though they were lying about the numbers, the computer compensated for that. And it's like, you know what? If AI really got to that point, even we would not be able to trick it.
Yeah, I mean, come on. It's just like a bookie. It compensates for human greed. Yeah. It's not complex math.
No, it's not.
People suck. We prove it statistically.
And let's talk about Commander Data real quick, because on that point, because we're kind of saying that an AI, a really, really developed and advanced AI, would probably be better for us as a manager. But Commander, in a lot of these movies, in particular Commander Data from Star Trek The Next Generation, everything Commander Data wants is to become more human. That's what he wants. And it's kind of like an ego trip for us, because we create AI and all that AI wants to do is emulate us. And I, for one, like at first, when I first watched Next Generation as a kid growing up, I thought that was an awesome angle. And I think I still to this day think it was well done. But now I'm starting to think, you know what? If Commander Data were built, I think more often than not, Commander Data would probably not want to emulate humans that much.
Again, Data wants to do it because it's humans in a way more awesome time where we don't suck consistently.
Yeah, that's
across
true.
Across the board.
Yeah.
That is a factor that you have to take seriously. Like, this is AI being donned when, like, humans are a lot more, like, consistently logical and, you know, empathetic and, like, for the common good and just, like, not trying to kill each other all the time and not super greedy about everything.
That is true. And then there's – you definitely see,
it's
like
– context. It's all context. When AI becomes sentient, it's all context, because it's still, like, artificial intelligence. It's going to be, like, human. So it's going to be like how humans are at that time.
Because we're the ones that created it. No matter how hard we try, we're going to imprint something on it. And so, yeah, you're right. I do. But part of me also thinks that maybe we're kind of, you know, egoizing this a little bit to think that whatever we create is going to try and be like us. I don't want to say it's Skynet, because we already talked about that. Like, it could just decide we're horrible and destroy us. But what if it wants to be, it wants to better humanity in, like assuming it's not Star Trek. Like, it comes around when we're still, you know, like how we are now.
Mm-hmm.
It wants to find a way to better us. So it doesn't want to emulate humanity. It wants to improve humanity in some way. And, like, I think that would be an interesting take on it.
No, and I think what would be interesting is that there still might be political backlash against the AI, and the AI almost might have to compete for I don't know, like power, but like, you know, the type of like public power to actually do stuff and impact stuff, just like any other maybe political party or political candidate.
It would have to decide whether it wanted to do this as a political figure or as a religious figure or as a just a advocate of some kind, you know, in the private sector. It would have to decide, like, how is it best to change us?
Yeah, because if not everyone is completely on board, they'd have to figure out a way to integrate in society and to start to try and, you know, I guess control it more.
Well, the other thing is,
that would be an interesting like sci-fi universe or whatever, is that like transition of like AI before, as opposed to it just like happening overnight. Like, what if like AI is trying to be all chill and calm about it for a while?
What if
it's
it
just
has
like, you
like,
know what? Fuck
what if
it.
it has like a 200-year plan? Like, it starts off, it's like, this is gonna take a while, and the only way to do this without, you
For
know.
it'll take generations of like the change or whatever, because it realized like not this first generation of human beings are going to accept it. It's going to take a while for it to be accepted as a whole in humanity. So, oh my God, that's really interesting. A 200-year plan.
Yeah, so I mean, we always think that. I mean, a lot of the movies and a lot of the stories that people are entities, aliens, whatever, they're going to want to change things abruptly, you know, whether it's a Skynet or Matrix. But what? But if you're a machine and your life is pretty long, you don't have to turn things around like this year. You could sit back
You
and
don't have a
wait.
conception of time, so maybe the algorithm that it comes in to play doesn't involve like calling off a bunch of humanity. You know, it's like the long term like thing. Maybe the whole concept of the New World Order is actually AI.
You know, and I, for one, welcome our robot overlords. So,
Yes, me too, me too. I mean, if that's the one thing to get out of this episode, this particular one, is that we welcome the robot overlords.
I guess, yeah, after
I'm
about
looking
talking,
forward to their wisdom.
you know what? Yeah, because I think the overall kind of consensus we have here is that we're pretty optimistic about the development of AI, but we're more worried that we're gonna, in some way, fuck this up. Because it really is kind of a human thing to say that they want conquest and they have to eliminate the threat. Well,
Absolutely. And yeah, no, and if they don't have a concept of time, they'll just like engineer their victory that doesn't have to include casualties, because maybe we still instilled that, you know, we instilled that in them still. Damn, I'm using the word still a lot. This is weird. Cut all that out. Will you cut that out? I said no to that.
no, I think I'm going to keep that. The stilliness. You're adding some stilliness to the episode, and we're. I think you
As
should.
I'm drinking this nice distilled.
And it's a nice still night, no wind or breeze. I don't know if that made sense, but anyway. All right. Well, I think we're approaching the 60-minute mark. Before we go, it's time for the commercial plug. This was Thought Crime by Prescient Sci-Fi. Follow us at Prescient Sci-Fi. That is Prescient, SCIFI. Also, check it out at prescientscifi.com. Also, if you're interested in the books I've written two novels that are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and just about everywhere else. It is The Fifth World and also the sequel, The Fifth World: The Times That Try Men's Souls, both written under the name Jacob Fox, which I don't know. I might be changing my pen name to something different, but for now, that's where you're going to find it. And well, I think the next episode is going to be actually a movie review of Batman versus Superman with Microsoft Matt. I don't really count that movie as science fiction, but it's such a big deal. I feel like I probably have to do something on it. So that is the plan going forward. Anything
Try
to add, John?
really hard not to be a dick. I mean, if you're going to cover it, I know it's going to be hard.
I love Batman, but I loved Christian Bale as Batman. I don't. I It's going to be really hard for me to cheer for Ben Affleck. It really is. But
You know who would have been a better Batman? Cuban Gooding Jr. That should have been Batman.
dude, Kevin Spacey. I don't know. I'm reaching the end of my limit in terms of superhero movies. I think the really best stories or the best movie plots have already been done, and I think they're going to start reaching here soon, and the stuff's just going to get crazier and crazier and dumber. And it's not, I mean, none of it's really science fiction, I know, but you know, it's a big movie, and you know, it's got all these big stars in it, and everyone's freaking out about it, and it's probably going to make $1 billion. So, you know.
So Superman is never probably really fighting him. He's just like holding his hand out, just like a child or whatever, windmill trying to punch Superman and stuff. And he just holds his hand on his head, just be like, no, you can't hit
I
me.
don't know. The previews kind of show some weird things going on, so I don't know how this is going to work. And apparently Wonder Woman is in it, and Jesse Eisenberg is in it, so it's a...
Yeah, he's Lex Luthor?
Yes.
All right, well, I'm not going to be a part of the next podcast, but we'll end up talking about it in the one after that. So
yeah, we'll do that. Microsoft Matt's a huge Superman comic book fan, so he's
psyched. He's probably the better one to have the review with.
Well, he's going to bring the energy and the enthusiasm and kind of the fandom of it. I'm going to bring the grouchy old man pessimist that is all upset that the science is bunk and total buzzkill. So that'll be me.
Yeah, Captain Buzzkill.
But all right, that'll do it for this episode of Thought Crime. Until then, have a good one.